The Royal Dessert Sour, directed by Rudy Valley. Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and company. From where we're standing here under the starter's gun, tonight's show looks like the best in weeks. Plenty of comedy, for one thing, supplied principally by the queen of all hillbilly funsters, Judy Canova, assisted by Sister Annie and Brother Zeke. To the clan Canova, add the McNulty family, Eileen, Peter, and Mom McNulty, in Irish songs, Jigs and Blarney. From Broadway come three fine character players and a boy actor, one each from the season's four big hit plays, Our Town, Of Mice and Men, On Borrowed Time, and I'd Rather Be Right. Arthur Allen, Frank Conroy, Thomas Findlay, and Master Warren Mills will be heard in No More Battles, a charming Memorial Day comedy by Merrill Rogers. Tonight's interviewee, my friend, advisor, and teacher, Professor William Lyon Phelps, Billy Phelps of Yale, and of course Tommy Riggs, Betty Lou, and Irving Caesar. From Broadway's newest hit musical, a medley, I Married an Angel, Two Choice Tunes. On your marks, gentlemen, get set, go. Why doesn't my heart go dancing? Spring is here. Why isn't the waltz entrancing? No desire, no ambition leaves me. Maybe it's because nobody needs me. Spring is here. Why doesn't the breeze delight me? Stars appear. Why doesn't the night invite me? Maybe it's because nobody loves me. Spring is here, I hear. Doesn't the breeze delight me? Stars appear. Why doesn't the night invite me? Maybe it's because nobody loves me. Spring is here, I hear. The McNulty family, Eileen, Peter, and Mom. You've never seen the McNultys in a Broadway nightclub. They're not that sort of an act at all, but they do work every night at receptions, balls, and shindigs, tendered, sponsored, and thrown by New York's large, sociable, and fun-loving Irish population. Recently, an enterprising phonograph record firm waxed a series of McNulty songs and found the ventures immensely profitable. Informality is the keynote of the McNulty brand of entertainment. They're very real and very Irish. Here's the McNulty family.
Thank you, Rudy. With such a fine song as you have in your head, I think you must be Irish yourself.
Well, Mom, that's at least partly true.
Only partly? Well, don't worry about it. We can't all be lucky. Anyhow, this is a fine place you have here. And look at all the people. You know, it reminds me of the time the McCarthys threw a St. Patrick's Day party in honor of young Katie McCarthy's graduating from high school. And she was only 16, mind you. And as pretty as a picture. Eileen, Peter?
Yes, Mom?
Tell them about McCarthy's party.
Michael McCarthy once gave a great party on St. Patrick's night in his mansion so fine. His friends and relations received invitations. They formed quite a crowd when they sat down to dine. Beside all the Irish in town, my, but I wish I knew all the names of the folks gathered there. Some Germans and Hebrews, Italians and Swedes too. All nations attended McCarthy's affair. They listened with glee to their host. When McCarthy said, boys, here's a toast. Let ye all be Irish tonight. Let ye all be Irish tonight. If French, Scotch, and Germans, Italians, and Jews just act like McNulty's, Malone's, and McHugh's, and I'll shake ye all by the hand as if ye came from Ireland. Forget all your troubles, your cares, and your woes. Imagine you're one of the Macs and the O's. Do everything Irish and you'll have no woes. Let ye all be Irish tonight. Let ye all be Irish tonight.
It was a grand success, that party. Sure, I'll never forget the look on Mr. McCarthy's face when Mike McGuire came in. And there wasn't a chair in the house for him to be resting his long legs on. Peter? Eileen?
Yes, Mom?
Tell him about McGuire, and you'd better be going to town.
Oh, my name it is McGuire, and I'll quickly tell to you of a pretty girl I admire named Katie Donahue. She's frail, fat, and forty, and believe me when I say, every time that I go courting her, I can hear her mother say, Johnny, get up in the choir, get up and give the man a seat. Don't you see, it's Mr. McGuire, and he's courting your sister Kate. Well, you know really well he owns a farm a little way out of town. Will you get up out of there and be taking the air and let Mr. McGuire sit down?
I could dance rings around that. Well, and of course, even Mr. McCarthy's party couldn't hold a candle to the ones they have in the old country sometimes. I'll never forget the time that young divil Pat Rafferty brought the rumba to the town of Auchnacloy. Peter?
Yes, Ma'am?
Eileen?
Yes, Ma'am?
Tell them about Rafferty.
Was it Mary Murphy's wedding when the fun was at its height? When Rafferty, the troubled man, came in and he was tight. Says he, I'll demonstrate a step, I picked it up in London. And for a partner quick, he grabbed young Susan and McCundon. Was the rumba that he called it, and I'm telling you, me boy, there'll be trouble if he brings it here to peaceful Auchnacloy. Oh, when Rafferty and Susan did the rumba, sure their feet went with her patter on the floor. And them cutting such a figure made me wonder how we'd look at decent people anymore. Oh, the music, it was awful, everybody was in pain. If the minstrel, he had heard it, he'd have smashed his harp again. But the turn and the twist, it was a sight for man and boy when a rafferty brought the rumba to the town of Auchnacloy. In the midst of all this noise and din walked Father Dan McCauley. Says he, tell me the meaning of this sinfulness and folly. Oh, Father dear, says Rafferty, is it his sin, I wonder, to be teaching these young sweet collies the way to dance the rumba. But Rafferty, says Father Dan, your senses you're losing. Not content with being that yourself, you've nearly murdered Susan. Oh, when Rafferty and Susan did the rumba, through the feet with bitter patter on the floor, and them cutting such a figure made me wonder how we'd look at decent people anymore. All the music, it was awful, everybody was in pain. If the minstrel, he had heard it, he'd have smashed his harp again. But the turn and the twist, it was a sight for man and boy when no rafferty brought the rumba to the town of Auchnacloy.
As the Broadway season fades into springtime doldrums, Four attractions stand out as the best American plays of the year. However different in theme and execution, these four have at least one quality in common: superlative acting in secondary as well as featured roles. We have chosen four actors, one from each play, to bring to life the characters imagined by Merrill Rogers in a tenderly comic drama for Memorial Day entitled No More Battles. From the Pulitzer Prize winning Our Town, we have chosen Arthur Allen to play the lead in No More Battles. From In Borrowed Time, Frank Conroy, who will play General Robert E. Lee tonight. From Of Mice and Men, Thomas Findlay to play General Ulysses S. Grant. From I'd Rather Be Right, young Warren Mills to play Bobby. The play, No More Battles. Most of you who were born sometime, we'll say, before the second decade of the present century, have a vivid recollection of at least one old veteran of the war between the states. Perhaps he was your own grandfather, and like Bobby's grandfather, told you tales of his martial exploits that made up in glamour and romantic quality for what at times they may have lacked in downright truthfulness. Quite likely, though, the old gentleman told those stories so often that he came to believe them himself. I hope he did, just as I hope Bobby's grandpa believed the stories he told Bobby, and especially about the time when... But let's hear it as it must have sounded to Bobby some 30 or more years ago.
Bobby, yes, I hear it's getting pretty near your bedtime. Now, Ma ain't going to like it a bit unless you start getting undressed and get ready pretty soon.
But just one story, Grandpa, about the war, and then I'll go right to bed.
Well, maybe there's time for just one story.
Tell me about the Battle of Gettysburg and how you and Captain Slocum stopped Pickett's charge.
Why, Bobby, I've told that to yourself, and I think you'd know it forwards and backwards by now. I'll tell you. Maybe I'll tell you one I ain't never told you before. One that's a whole lot more important than any battle.
More important than any battle, Grandpa?
That's right, Bobby. And it's something I'm prouder about than anything that ever has happened to me.
Gee whiz, Grandpa.
I'll wait just a minute now till I get my pipe going here. Well, sir, you see, we was in camp down there in Virginia, and the war had been going on for pretty nigh to 4 years. We was still a-fighting. You know, Bobby, after 4 years, you get to look at things different than you did when you first marched out in a brand new uniform.
And the band playing.
Well, that's it, Bobby. Well, I remember it was along towards the middle of the afternoon. I'd been washing out my socks. While I was waiting for them to dry, I was sitting there on a log, thinking about things. And while I was sitting there, up come the sergeant, and he says, General Grant was mighty anxious to see me.
General Grant?
General Grant.
Gee.
So naturally I said, well, so I tell the general I'll be right along, and I started to put on my socks.
Didn't you wait for your socks to get dry?
Well, shucks, no, Bobby, I just put them on wet. When you're in a war, a little thing like wet socks don't bother you none.
But wouldn't you catch cold?
Why, of course not, boy, of course not. Well, anyway, I started for General Grant's tent. He was mighty busy working at a table with a whole lot of papers on it, but when I got there, he looked up and he said...
Hello, Grandpa. Come in and sit down.
Well?
I wanted to talk to you. I've been sort of worried.
Well, that's too bad, General Grant. What are you worrying about?
It's about this war, Grandpa.
Well, I've been sort of worrying about it myself, General. Wondering if it was ever going to end.
That's just what I mean. When I first came to Virginia, I said I was going to fight it out on this line if it took all summer. But it's been all winter, too. And here it is spring. And a lot of people are getting sick of the whole business.
You're not telling me any news, General. I've got a girl up north named Grandma. And she's getting pretty sick of this war. If you ask me, General, we'd all have been a sight better off if this war had never got started.
I'm just as anxious to get it over as you are, Grandpa. But the question is, how are we going to do it?
Well, I'll tell you, General. You know, I've had an idea in my head now for quite a spell. Say, why don't you go and have a talk with General Lee?
Talk with General Lee?
Just sit down, the two of you, and talk the whole thing over. Maybe you could find some way to stop all this shooting and killing.
Why, I couldn't do that, Grandpa. If there's any talking to be done. General Lee has got to make the first move.
Now, General, you're just being stubborn.
Well, maybe I am, Grandpa. But the first move on anything of that sort has got to come from General Lee, and that's flat.
What difference does it make who makes the first move? The best thing anyone can do about this war, or any war, besides not starting it in the first place, is to stop it. Most people ain't going to give a hoot how you stop it, as long as you do stop it.
Well, you've been a mighty good soldier, Grandpa.
Well,
and I'm not going to say anything about that point of view. But I'm a little disappointed in you just the same. I thought you might give me a real idea.
Well, I thought I was giving you a real idea.
Not that sort of an idea. That isn't going to help anything right now.
Well, I'm sorry you're disappointed in me, General, but of course, if that's the way you look at it, I...
Oh, don't feel that way, Grandpa. I appreciate your trying to give me a hand. But I guess I'll just have to figure it out myself the best way I can.
All right, then, General Grant. Sergeant said something about maybe we'd be having another battle tomorrow. In which case, I'll go back and finish drying out myself.
Did General Grant say you were mad at him, Grandpa?
Oh, no, I guess he knew I wasn't mad at him, but we just didn't see eye to eye on this business, that's all. And, of course, being the general, he naturally had the last word. You know, the more I got to thinking about what I'd said to General Grant, the more commonsensical it all seemed. And so, all of a sudden, I got another idea, which seemed to bust all over me.
Another idea, Grandpa?
Yes, sir. Another idea. I says to myself, if General Grant won't do nothing about it, well, I'll go to General Lee. And dang it all, boy, that's just what I done.
Golly, what did General Lee look like, Grandpa?
Oh, I see. He was tall, real stately and dignified looking. Anyone could have told he was a soldier every inch of him. Only, well, he was sort of gentle looking, too. And sad. Or you could see he was the sort that worried about things, just the same as General Grant. And when he saw me, he just sort of smiled and...
You want to see me, Grandpa?
That's what I come for, General Lee. It's mighty kind of you to take the time when I know you must be so busy and everything.
Oh, that's quite all right. I am busy. Well, I understand it's something pretty important.
Well, I think it's pretty important, General. Elsewise, I wouldn't have taken the chance to come all this way down here in my blue uniform and risk getting shot at.
Well, I'm glad nobody shot you, Grandpa.
I tell you what I come see you about, General Lee. You see, I was talking to General Grant just this afternoon about how we could put an end to this war. I got the idea maybe we could do it without having to fight no more battles. You and him could get together somehow and sit down and settle it.
It's not so simple as that, Grandpa. The only way for a soldier to settle anything is by fighting.
Now, that's just what General Grant says. Oh, I didn't get no satisfaction from him at all.
General Grant's a mighty fine soldier. I can see how he'd look at it that way.
Yes, he's a mighty fine soldier, all right, General, but, oh, sometimes he's stubborn as a mule.
You have to be stubborn sometimes, Grandpa.
Well, anyway, what I had in mind was if you could sort of make the first move.
Me?
Well, just let General Grant know that you was willing to talk.
Well, I'll have to admit, things don't look so good for us right now. We've been losing quite a few battles lately.
Well, I wasn't thinking of that so much, General.
And our uniforms have had so much wear and tear, they're starting to give out. And some of the boys have holes right through the soles of their shoes. But that doesn't mean we're licked, Grandpa. Not by a long shot.
No, I wasn't saying that you was licked, General.
Our boys haven't lost any of their grit. And the next battle we fight, we'll show you good and proper.
Well, now, maybe that's true, General. But my point is, what is the use of keeping this war going?
Grandpa, when anyone asks me a question like that, it makes me feel very sad.
What makes everybody feel sad, General, so long as nobody seems to get the answer to it?
I know, I know. We've been in it now for 4 terrible years.
And the fighting's still going on.
Yes, the South is still fighting.
General Lee, why does it have to go on? Dang it all, General. If you and General Grant sat down and talked it all out, you could stop it tomorrow.
But, Grandpa, even if I were willing, you say that General Grant isn't.
He won't make the first move. That's all, General.
But if I make the first move, Grandpa, people will think it was because Well...
Oh, fiddlesticks, General. Everybody knows what tough fighters you boys have been. They'll just give you credit for having a heap more sense than anybody in the whole shebang. And a lot more gumption.
Perhaps you're right.
Now, of course, mind you, I don't promise anything about what General Grant would say. He might want to argue pretty strong about you fellas coming back into the Union.
Yes, I imagine he would, Grandpa.
You know, after all, General, we had a pretty good nation before we got the fighting among ourselves. And once we got the fighting out of our system, maybe we could all see that one big country was a lot better than two little ones.
I thought about that too, Grandpa.
Is it you come from Virginia, General Lee? General Grant, he comes from Ohio. And I come from the state of Maine. When you add it all up, General, we're all Americans.
But even if I did offer to talk to General Grant, Grandpa, I couldn't make any promises as to what I'd say.
Well, I ain't asking you to make any promises, General. Neither of you. I'm only asking you and General Grant to sit down together. Because if you'd only try it, General, the both of you might get to see that whatever it was got us all fighting each other. Why, it ain't worth the life of another boy, whether he's got on a blue uniform or a gray. Will you do it, General? Dang it all, General, will you do...
I was just looking out over those mountains, Grandpa. Whenever I want to think about anything, I like to look at them.
I know. It's like Psalmist feller who wrote about lifting up your eyes to the hills.
King David, it was.
King David. Will you do it, General Lee?
I'll do it, Grandpa.
See, that's fine, General. Say, I'll go back and tell General Grant and fix it up for him to meet you. Say, day after tomorrow.
The sooner the better. If we're going to make a try, or whereabouts shall we meet?
Say, I know a place, General. I noticed it while I was coming down here. It's sort of quiet, and it'd be convenient for both parties. It's a little town they call Appomattox Courthouse.
Is that all, Grandpa?
Yeah, that's all, Bobby. Well, now it's time for you to get to bed before your ma comes up here and finds you.
Well, you didn't tell me what they said. And General Lee and General Grant got together.
Oh, well, I never did know what they said, Bobby, because when they got to the place, they just went into the back room and shut the door. Well, the next day, we learned that the war was over and we could all go home.
And there wasn't any more shooting and killing?
There wasn't any more shooting and killing. And that's the reason I said, Bobby, I was prouder of that than anything that ever happened to me. And if you forget all the stories I've told you about the battles, just remember this one, and you will have something that'll be mighty important to you when you grow up to be a man, sir. Well, now here, you get to bed, Bobby, just as fast as you can get them buttons unbuttoned.
WEAF, New York.
And perhaps what Europe needs today is some of Grandpa's commonsensical notions. The Royal Desserts Hour enters Act Two under full speed. Just ahead are Judy Canova, William Lyon Phelps, Tommy Riggs, Betty Lou, and with a rousing new safety song for the holiday weekend, Irving Caesar.
And you're watching a parade, and you're listening to the band, and the crowd begins to shove. Always hold your mother's hand. When the drums rum tum tum tum, as they're passing where you stand, shout, hooray, 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 but keep holding mother's hand. Listen to those marching feet, see them tramping down the street. At the end of the parade comes a feeling that is grand. When you know that you're not lost, because you've held your mother's hand. Now, Betty Lou, when Mr. Tommy and I promised to take you to see the circus parade, you promised not to ask too many questions.
Well, how many questions is too many?
Now, listen, Betty Lou, you passed that point an hour ago. Now, please be quiet, will you?
But, Mr. Tommy, suppose they don't at all, either.
Now, listen, Betty Lou, I've told you 20 times that the elephants will pass right by here. Now, this makes 21 times.
But you didn't hope to die and cross your heart.
All right, I hope to die and double-cross my heart. Now stop asking questions till they do get here.
Well, gee whiz, what's taking so long? What's the matter?
I don't know anything about it except they'll be along in a minute.
Well, if you don't know anything about it, how do you know they'll be along in a minute?
Because they will. Now be quiet.
Well, maybe they changed their minds and they're not going to have any elephants today. What do you think, Mr. Lurley?
Oh, I'm sure the elephants are coming, Betty Lou.
Well, maybe they got mixed up and went up the wrong street or something.
Now, listen, Betty Lou, I have a headache. Now, look. Oh, look, there's the cowboy.
Yo-ho!
Oh, look, Betty Lou. Here come the elephants now.
Oh, the elephants. Oh, boy, here they come, too. Mr. Irving? Well, gee whiz, they must be lost, too. And I told Mr. Tommy to hold on to my hand, too. Golly, Ned.
Well, what's the matter, little girl? Lost?
Oh, hello, Mr. Policeman. No, I'm not lost, but Mr. Tommy and Mr. Irving are.
Oh, what do this Tommy and Irving look like? Maybe I can find them for you.
Well, gee whiz, if I tell you, will you promise never to tell them what I told you, if I tell you? Because I like them, and they're awfully nice, too. And after all, you can't help how you look.
Well, go on. I won't tell a soul.
Well, Mr. Tommy, of course, he's very pretty. Only he's got great big pop eyes, and he looks like Felix.
Like Felix?
Yes, Felix is my goldfish.
That's a help. We'll just look for Mr. Tommy in the aquarium. And what does the other fellow look like?
Well, you know Mr. Tyrone Power in the movie.
Yes.
Well, if you see anybody who looks like him, don't bother. But Mr. Caesar is pretty, too. Only his face is, well, he's got did you ever see a greyhound with glasses?
What? Oh, Tommy, there she is now.
Betty Lou, you've had us most worried to death.
Well, that's awful funny because there's nothing for you to worry about at all.
No, why not?
Well, because I told the man what you both look like, but he promised he'd never breathe it to a soul, too.
Well, I guess all's forgiven, Betty Lou. That is, if you'll make us a promise.
Make you a promise?
Yes, and this time keep it. Now, will you tell her what it is, Irving?
Darling, it's very simple. It's merely this.
When you're watching a parade,
bum, bum, bum,
and you're listening to the band,
mm-hmm,
and the crowd begins to shove,
bum, bum, bum,
always hold your mother's hand.
When the drums run, and you're passing where you stand, shout, hooray, hooray, hooray.
But keep holding mother's hand. See them coming down the street.
Ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bum.
Oh, at the end of the parade,
comes a feeling that is grand. When you know that you're not lost, because you've held your mother's hand.
Ladies and gentlemen, every one of you is entitled to a full-size piano copy of the song you've just heard, Watching a Parade. Get this song, the complete words and music. Teach it to your children. You may be immensely thankful when the next parade goes by. This song is regular, full-size sheet music, just like the kinds you pay 35 cents for in the stores. The cover design is drawn by the famous Rose O'Neill, creator of the Cupid. And we will mail you this song if you send us one package front from any Royal Dessert and only 10 cents. Send for a copy before next Thursday. The children love to sing it. And to make this a real surprise package when it arrives at your home, we will include a beautiful set of colored cutouts. First, there's a cutout
of me, Betty Lou, showing my big blue eyes.
And your golden curls.
Yes, and all the beautiful dresses I wore in Europe, too.
In France and Holland, in Ukraine and Sweden, the authentic colorful costumes of the country with hats to match. All these and your song of safety for only one package front from any royal pudding or royal gelatin dessert and only 10 cents. So join the thousands who help keep their children safe through song. Buy royal puddings tomorrow and rush the box front and dime to us before next Thursday. Address Royal Desserts, 420 Lexington Avenue, 420 Lexington Avenue, New York City. Please specify that the song you want is Watching a Parade, because a new song and a different set of Betty Lou colored cutouts are offered each week. Buy royal puddings tomorrow.
Goodness gracious me, who's that little lady right before my eyes? What a sight to see in her funny clothes, hard to recognize. Dressed up in a gown that trails on the floor, in a picture hat that your mother wore. Living in a world that you never saw, my little lady may believe. What a pair of shoes, what two tiny feet. What a pair of gloves, the fingers don't meet. Posing in a glass, your joy is complete. My little lady may believe. In your little arms, the doll you enfold means the world and all to you. But you could never love the doll that you hold half as much as I love you. Dream your little dreams and may they come true. May the coming years bring happiness too. All my future dreams are wrapped up in you, my little lady.
Suppose that every college has its one teacher, beloved above the rest, affectionately nicknamed and sought out each year by returning alumni. But up at New Haven, we like to think there's no one quite like Billy Phelps, William Lyon Phelps of Yale to the outside world, Professor Emeritus of English Literature, lecturer, radio commentator, former baseball and tennis star, author of an amazing variety of books and articles, including, by the way, a particularly valuable discussion of marriage and happiness in the June Good Housekeeping magazine. In our intermittent investigation into men and their jobs, we have thus far neglected the teaching profession. We make up for neglect by introducing one of America's truly great teachers, Professor William Lyon Phelps of Yale. Well, Professor, how's everything up at New Haven?
Everything's just about the same, Rudy. New faces, of course, new buildings, but the same essentially. Of course, the college band isn't what it used to be.
Neither is the former first saxophone player thereof.
You don't appear to have changed much in 11 years, Rudy. Just a trifle heavier, perhaps. But then you ought to see some members of the class of 1927.
The bloom of youth is wearing off the class of 27 pretty fast, I'm afraid. As Shakespeare put it, we're most of us, quote, in fair round belly with good capon lined, with eyes severe and beard of formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances, unquote.
My goodness, Rudy, how learned you've become.
Oh, I've been doing a little cramming against your arrival, Professor. Do you remember the time I played the saxophone in your T&B class?
Meaning Tennyson and Browning, audience. Not tuberculosis. I certainly do remember, Rudy. And do you remember the time you came back to your class reunion in 33 and what fun we had together with Bolton and a whole crowd of New Haven musicians?
I remember very well, Professor.
I remember, too, a couple of other returning graduates about that time who were slightly overcome by enthusiasm or by some form of liquid affect. How they went up to Dean Jones, slapped the dean on the back, and one of them said, "Oh, Dean Jones, you don't remember me." And the dean replied, "Your name I have forgotten, but your manners are familiar." And the other one said, "Dean Jones, I bet you don't know who I am." And the dean replied, "Your face I have forgotten, but I recall the breath."
Professor, it seems to me that I've heard that story somewhere before.
Quite possibly. You see, I've been telling it every spring for the last 25 years.
Oh, but you've been teaching longer than that, haven't you, Billy?
Yes, but even college professors have to change their acts occasionally, Rudy.
How long were you a university teacher, Billy?
I taught 1 year at Harvard and 41 years at Yale, which I regard as an equitable distribution of my time between the two universities.
And you've never tired of teaching. You were never bored?
Not one single day. It was always exciting. And the older I grew, the more exciting it became. You see, I loved two things. The subject I taught, English literature, and the object I taught, college students.
You really enjoy teaching, then. You don't need to act the part?
Although the teacher is something like an actor, especially when he is teaching Shakespeare and Browning and dramatic literature, I myself never had to pretend or to work out any enthusiasm. I regard teaching as terrifically exciting. There's no job, no profession, no art, no adventure more thrilling than teaching. I love to teach as an artist loves to paint, as a pianist to play, as a singer to sing, as an athlete to play games. It never seemed dull or monotonous or a routine or mechanical to me. Every recitation was an adventure. I used to wake up early and look forward with almost unrestrainable eagerness to meeting my first class.
There's a moral there, I think.
Yes, but I'd rather use you as the example instead of myself. Rudy, you're the hardest working young man I've ever met. You were when you were working your way through Yale. You still are. Here's what I believe. There's no blessing in the world like hard work. All our troubles come from thinking of ourselves. Hard work takes us away from ourselves and makes us think of something else. Tremendous vitality comes not from rest, but from work. What keeps people alive, what preserves vitality into old age, is not deliberate care for health, food, dieting, sleep, exercise, for I have known many people whose main occupation was taking care of their health, and they're dead. And I have known many people who continually overwork. They're not only alive, but filled with vitality, intensely interested in life and living. A German philosopher defines existence in this way. To be is to be in relations. He meant the more things we are interested in, the more we are alive. A Frenchman pointed to a cemetery and said, those people are not reading the newspapers. My main object as a teacher is to open the eyes of my pupils so they will see how exciting it is just to be alive.
If I remember correctly, that was Robert Browning's point of view also.
It was, and that gets us back to the classroom saxophone episode you mentioned. Browning, ladies and gentlemen, was a musician as well as a poet. When he was 5 years old, he learned to play a march in C major by a certain Charles Avison, A-V-I-S-O-N. Years later, he wrote a poem about the march. Now I wanted my undergraduates to hear the music in connection with my lecture. And as the only instrument I can play is the typewriter, I call for volunteers. Rudy answered the call and played the march in the classroom. I persuaded him to have his band play it now. It's 200 years old, and to the best of my knowledge, has been played only once in this century by Mr. Valet. We hear Avison's march in C major, Robert Browning's favorite. Thank you again, Rudy. And may I add, in Browning's own words, there is no truer truth obtainable by man than comes of music.
Well, after that, nothing matters, does it? It's a thing that one cannot explain. But it's like a long draft of champagne to awaken perchance to the world of La France, where only the river is sane. It's a matter of learning to live that old ladies would never forgive. It's plain to see sunshine is free. Now is the time for la vie, when all the trees are green, so green, and all the grass is green, so green, and all the frogs and flies are green. It is the spring. Asparagus is green, so green, and most of us are green, so green. The smoke room jokes, let's keep them clean, are green, so green. And when you meet a girl, you need not ask for pardon. Just say, if your name's Maud, please come into my garden. When trees and flowers and grass are green and life's a joke, see what I mean. It's no surprise to realize that I'm so green. The leeks are green, so green, so green. The old cabbage is green, so green. And figs and beans and plums and cress are green, so green. They say this thing called love is something we all die for. And cry and lie and don't ask why, but this we die for. The leaves above are green, so green. The turtle dove is green, so green. But after all, I'm all serene and green, so green. Get me a glass of buttermilk quickly, please. Of all the hillbillies who have deserted squirrel guns for microphones since radio first sent a siren call into the deeper gulches, only two have risen to real fame. One is Bob Burns, the bazooka boy of Van Buren, and the other is Judy Canova, the Venus of Unadilla. We handed Judy her first major network nearly 5 years ago, and Papa Whiteman later gave her his long-term blessing with Sister Annie and Brother Zeke. She has recently returned from London, where she had startled the natives right out of their monocles. Presenting now that Merry Mountain madcap,
that hoyden from the hills, that pixelated pixie from the peanut plantation, Judy Canova with Annie and Zeke.
Hi, Miss Valley. Hi, Mr. McNee. Where is it? Hello, everybody.
Hello, Judy.
Well, let me look at you, Miss Valley. You sure are looking well. What's the matter? You been sick?
No, Judy. I feel as frisky as a 2-year-old in a right patch. How do you feel?
Well, I never felt better or had less. Of course, my brother Zeke here, he's kind of defeated. He's recuperating himself.
What was the trouble, Judy?
Lord, damn, I'm telling you, that boy just had himself a serious operation. Had his socks chiseled off. Say, Miss Valet, I want you to meet my sister Annie. Annie, come on over here. Get on over here. Now listen here to me. I want you to go ahead, don't, and say howdy to Mr. Valet. Real pretty like now. Go ahead, don't. Hello, everything. You have to sort of kind of excuse Annie tonight to see. She's all nervous and jittery and everything. Ain't you, Annie? Talk to the folks now. That woman sure can talk. Yes, sir. But I know what's the matter with her, Mr. Valet.
Yes, Judy, what?
Well, just got herself a brand new boyfriend.
Oh, she didn't.
No, she did.
Well, it's very interesting. Tell me, Annie, what's your new boyfriend like?
Wild women?
No, no. No, Annie, I mean, what does he look like?
He'd look just like you if he had teeth.
Get on over there. Zeke, come on over here, son. I want you to meet Mr. Rudy Valet.
Gosh, he sure is a skinny critter.
Zeke, that's the microphone.
Judy, do I really look like that?
I ain't saying. Don't mind Annie and Zeke, Miss Valet. You see, they're really great admirers of yours.
So that's what my audience looks like.
So you see, I'm quite a valet fan myself. I sure do like your music.
Thank you, Judy. You're very kind. You see, we're a little handicapped tonight. We have no piccolo in the band.
You ain't got no what?
A piccolo.
Hey, Zeke, come here, son. What is a piccolo?
A piccolo is a fellow what gets paid for dancing with old women.
That's the smartest boy that ever come out of Yale.
Judy?
Yes, sir?
Judy, there's something I wanted to ask you for some time.
Something you've been wanting to ask me?
Yes.
See there, Annie? Of course, I've always knowed to have it, but just never knowed how much I would have had before.
Well, you see, I hardly know how to go about it.
Well, you know I can't go about it for you.
Well, what I wanted to ask you is, is your brother Zeke really a hillbilly?
Well, I'll be dumb. Did you hear that, Zeke?
I ain't a-saying.
You see, Mr. Valet, now you done got Zeke's southern blood to boiling.
Oh, then he really is from the south.
Well, Mr. Valet, that boy is so southern that anything north of Georgia is way down east to him.
I suppose you've been taking Zeke and Annie to see the sights in New York.
Why, sure. You know, Mr. Valet, of all the sights I've seen in New York, I like Radio City the best. It's just about the prettiest place I've ever seen in all my days.
I bet it's about the biggest place you've ever seen, too, isn't it?
Are you telling I? It's the only place I ever seen that there was enough of.
Did you go all through it?
Why, sure. We seen the British building and the French building, the International building and the Music Hall and the RCA building. Then we took the elevator up to the 65th floor, and we went out on the terrace there where you could see the whole thing spread out down below you.
Yes, Judy, it's a great sight.
Yes, Mr. Valet. But I want to ask you one thing.
What's that?
Are they going to tear down all them buildings after the fair's over? Now we'd like to sing y'all a little old song. It was sung in a picture called Artists and Models. The name of the song is Jesse James.
It was on a Wednesday night. The moon was shining bright. They robbed the Glendale train.
Woo-hoo!
And the people laid in wait for 3 miles away from the outlaws back in Jesse James. Jesse had a wife to mourn all life. The children they are afraid. But they dirty little cowards and John to Mr. Howard.
Are here. So send for your copy of this song of safety when you're watching a parade. It may save you many hours of anxiety. Specify that you want this song, and the Betty Lou cutouts will be included. Send only one package front from Royal Desserts, any flavor, and only 10 cents to Royal Desserts, 420 Lexington Avenue, New York City.
Next week, another show full of new notions with a fine cast headed by Sir Cedric Hardwick. Also scheduled at this time are Fred Keating, Helen Howe, Tommy Riggs, and Irving Caesar. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.